Hey, America.
Start listening now.
Now. Oh, I'm so glad to be done with the kids. No more junior Eurovision. Only grown-up stuff here. So, Eric, break out the IPAs and your tax paperwork. These kids don't know what a W-2 is. I don't think half our listeners do either. Welcome to the world of U.S. tax law tonight on 12 Points from America.
Derek, roll that tax filing music.
And welcome to another fiscally responsible episode of 12 Points from America, Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, where you can get sponsor-free episodes of Planet Money, The Indicator, and Planet Money Summer School, plus access to bonus content. It's a new way to support the show you love. Learn more at plus.npr.org/planetmoney. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny. Wow. Okay. Do we have Michael Barbaro on the show? Like, is Kai Rizdal going to pop up from nowhere?
You'll have to just listen and find out.
What if we got Louise Schiavone for this. Yeah. What if we got Mary Louise Kelly? Maybe she's a big Eurovision head. She
Louise
does know
Schiavone
where Ukraine
sounds
is
like a Eurovision thing.
Kind of. You know? Yeah.
Like this year, all
representing San Marino.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, tune in to Louise Schiavone to see who the Italian representative is going to be or something. Speaking of the Italian representative, Sam, hit him with the social.
All right. Well, you can find us on all these standard social media outlets, Facebook, Blue Sky, et cetera, at 12 Points USA, or just email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com if you want to get in touch. You can find our merchandise over on our Redbubble page, including, as Eric just found out, we can make hats now.
We got hats. You can use your head to promote our show, and you should.
Yeah. Or you could support us with a contribution either on our Ko-fi account, that's Ko-fi, or on a Patreon monthly contribution. And whether you support us financially or not, we love and appreciate you either way. But Patreon supporters do get exclusive content and early access to episodes. I promised on our last episode that I wanted to shout out a couple of recent arrivals to our Patreon community. So we've got Daniel Osorio, Jane Sargent, Alex Adams, who I think I've mentioned before, but yay, Patreon. But also special thank you and welcome, and I can't remember how to say hello in Hungarian. From Daniel Farkas, so Kuzunum. I remember how to say thank you. Kuzunum, Daniel. Or Farkas Daniel, if you're Hungarian.
Yeah. Yay. Good to you. Yeah. Hungary. That's fantastic.
Yay. Thanks.
You should overthrow your government so they can be back in Europe.
This thing that we talk about. Yeah.
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 Eric, did you throw it to Sam for being the representative from Italy because she is honorarily Samantha Rossi? We'll go with that.
Okay.
Sam Rossi.
Danny, it wasn't the Italian broadcaster that messed my name up. It was the French broadcaster that messed my name up, where I was Samantha Rosse, R-O-S-S-E.
Rosse. Ooh, very Rosse.
Samantha Rosse, yes. C'est moi. Je suis Samantha Rosse.
Rosse.
Où est la bibliothèque? Le grand oui mange le pamplemousse.
Did France won junior again, right? Did we? Oh, no, that's right. Georgia.
Still basking in the afterglow.
It was really good. It's really good. If you've been skipping our shows because they were about Junior, first of all, shame on you. Second of all, go back and watch Junior. It was pretty good this year. And if you don't like Junior, you're going to like it even less because of the AI crap that they shoehorned in for no real reason. And if you like hate watching things related to AI, it's Christmas has come early for you. Check it out.
They are truly fantastic, truly awful. If you're a big fan of those Instagram reels of the AI cats encountering perilous circumstances while a meowed version of What Was I Made For plays in the background, then have we got the Junior Eurovision for you.
Oh, you guys don't know this?
What is the algorithm feeding you?
Oh, Danny, don't answer.
I'm very much looking forward to all of the listeners out there who know exactly what I'm talking about. Anyway, we have some fun stuff planned for this week's episode. A little bit tangentially related to Eric's NPR style lead-in, since we will be talking about another podcast. But until then, we do have, thank God,
a little bit of news. Sam, yeah. Our news trickle is beginning again.
Yeah, it's
and I'm
it's
a time. Big fan of a trickle. What? Go on.
Should you see a doctor about that?
No, I'm fine. I'm doing fine.
Okay, just making sure. We're just looking out for you, Danny.
You think I can see a doctor? This is America. Anyway.
No, you could see a doctor. You just can't afford it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. $20 copay will give me 2 seconds where he goes, that looks bad.
Wow, yeah, you really should see a doctor. Well, see ya. wait, aren't you the doctor? And he's gone. He's 5 miles away.
He's got
a doctor. Pagliacci sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
But Pagliacci, I'm the doctor. There's the joke.
So there is news. There's one thing I wanted to lead with because I have a question about it, and it's the sort of thing that Sam will know. So I was just waiting to ask until we were recording. So Basel did a public referendum saying, should we host Eurovision? Should we? I think it was sort of a fiscal thing, like on Planet Money, anyway, they voted to approve some amount of public funding to help cover the cost of Eurovision because it costs a lot of money to do this and to be the host city for, you know, a couple weeks at least. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a bit of a long process. My question is just, what would have happened if they'd said no?
Well, the actual hosting of Eurovision in Basel wasn't in jeopardy. That was not the risk that was going on there. If they had said no, basically what would have happened is that I think it's approximately $40 million, which is pretty close to 40 million Swiss franc, which is not too far off the 40 million euro, that would not have been allocated to the hosting of the project, which means they would have still hosted the show. However, all of the other projects that they were planning on having alongside the contest, you know, the Euro Club, this sort of second venue over at the arena across the way, all the sort of ancillary side things that go along with Eurovision would have been really stripped back. So, you know, we wouldn't have had, you know, the Eurovision Village and the Euro Club and all the side stuff. You wouldn't have had, you know, the festooning, all the public, the public transportation wouldn't have been, you know, branded in the same way. You wouldn't have had, it would have felt a lot more like Turin, frankly, which those of us who were there, there wasn't a lot of fanfare going on. There wasn't really a big Euro Club. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't as omnipresent in the host city as it was in, say, Liverpool, where it was everywhere. With this extra funding, they have the opportunity to potentially make it a Liverpool or a Malmö. First, I have to say, it's a fascinating process that Basel and Switzerland as a whole do these referenda. Like, just looking, they do maybe, it seems like 4 big votes a year on all sorts of public infrastructure questions, things relating to, you know, the length of the work week or retirement age, like things that really affect everybody. It's not just left to the governmental officials. It's really put to the people, which is kind of cool to see. This was originally brought up to a vote by a very conservative, religiously focused political party who looked at the, you know, the presence of folks like Bambi Thug and said, we don't want this satanic party to come to our doorstep. Well, 2/3 of the people have said, hey, we want the satanic party. Bring it. I mean, looking at the financial benefit, like if you were just looking at this as, do I want to spend $40 million on Eurovision? They are able to, or the pro-Eurovision party, I guess you could say, or the pro-Eurovision parties, are able to say, you know what, look at Liverpool, look at Malmö. They put this amount of money in, you know, they put X in, but they received X times 2 back. It's a great investment. And so I think people saw that and were like, this is a great opportunity. Why not? So Basel was always going to host, which is how big were they going with it?
Good. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like how they really would need some proper state backing in order to actually make sure that it's all in Basel. But like the canton that they're in,
yeah, so
are there even like surrounding towns are going to be surrounding well, towns are going to be reaping the benefits too?
Well, surely. I mean, Basel's kind of interesting because there's Baselstadt, like the actual like city of Basel is its
sounds
own canton.
Delicious. Yep.
And then there's like Basel.
Baselstadt.
I think it's called Basel Landschaft, which is like
God,
sort of,
even more delicious. Go on.
Yeah. Love a Basel Landschaft. But like that canton, which is sort of like the suburbs and the sort of countryside near Basel, that also has, you know, their hand in it. I think technically the arena is located in one, and the town sound is in the other. It's all really close to each other. And that's before you even consider the benefit that the French side and the German side are going to end up getting.
I was going to say, you think that it's Basel. You think they don't have literal billionaires visiting there every single other point in the year?
Yeah.
They're going to have fun.
Yeah, it's going to be fine.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is there, I guess the one big notable one where a host city had to be changed late in the game was 91 when it was going to be Rome and then it couldn't because of Volcano. Am I remembering this right?
I think it was a little bit, it was supposed to be in San Remo, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were planning on having it in San Remo that year. And then they're like, one, this venue is just not big enough. And two, we need something with a little bit more potential security because of all of the conflicts that were going on over in the former Yugoslavia at that time that were beginning to kind of blow up. I think that was part of it. If I'm remembering right. But they moved
the volcano thing that I'm thinking of.
Eric?
Oh.
I mean, Eyjafjallajökull really put a major damper on things in 2010 for like transportation of the delegations.
You know what it is? I'm thinking of the Tommy Lee Jones film Volcano from 1997. The coast was toast.
Not Dante's Peak?
No. Oh, screw Dante's Peak.
Okay.
Oh, Volcano all the way. Movie podcast. What else we got? What's going on? We got some other news about national finals and stuff.
Yeah. It looks like Armenia, after a couple of years of an internal selection, are going to be returning to a national final system, which I am personally really excited about. They've had some great stuff in the past. It looks like Norway, which is under the auspices of a new head of delegation, a new national final showrunner. They're changing their system up a bit. Instead of a multi-week system, it's going to be a single night national final.
A relief.
Yeah.
The sigh of relief that spread over this entire fandom.
It had gotten a little out of control.
Yeah. They're like really trying to gun to make it like Melody Festival. And it's like,
you guys are MGP.
I mean,
you're better than this.
Yeah. You do your own thing.
MGP is great.
I do like
it. But like,
but I don't need 10 heats with like 4 auto qualifiers. It doesn't, it's rubbing me the wrong way.
You just get so many situations where the conclusion is just so foregone.
Yes, exactly. You're just like, oh, great. The 4 auto qualifiers are now the 4 finalists. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. And
so for all along.
Yeah.
Speaking of hating AI.
Yeah.
Sorry, superhero Rob.
Oh God. Oh, why'd you wow. That might actually be is that better or worse than the junior AI?
That's a good question. Bad?
Honestly, there's very little that is worse than the junior AI. So yeah. I'm gonna hedge my bets on that one.
All right. That's totally fair. Let us know if you're listening which of these things you hate more. I might have to give it to my AI. I detested that. Oh my
but
Lord.
But where does the last polar bear fit into all of this?
I haven't actually heard that.
Okay.
So I don't know.
All right. Fair enough.
I incomplete ranking on my part, unfortunately. I feel like the only like positive surprise I remember ever getting from the MGP heat type situation was Blas Mafian.
Yeah.
Where like there was a big name or two that seemed sort of like a shoe-in just because that's how these things always go. And then was it called Let Loose?
Yeah, I think so.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
They came on. Played the heck out of it. And I remember thinking like, that should absolutely win this heat. It's not going to because of, you know, how these things go, but it should. And then it did. It made it through. And
it just blew everything away with their BDE, that big dude energy,
They duded our brains out on that one. So anyway, I'm glad that they're condensing that down because it's getting a little unwieldy.
Yeah. All right. Not calming things down, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how much you love San Remo. It looks like Italy have said that they are not calming down, that they're going to be increasing. I wasn't the one who put this note together. I'm assuming, Eric, was this you, that Italy's going to be pumping San Remo up even more? Is that the case?
Yeah, they've said that there's going to be more than 24 artists this time. They haven't gotten into a ton of detail, but I feel like every additional artist adds another 20 minutes to the San Remo final, probably. Yeah. So, like, buckle in. Just buckle the heck in.
I love it.
So soon it'll be the entire year, just the day after Eurovision will start up again.
Yeah, we'll be talking about like how Junior wrapped up, and we'll have our San Remo watch and be like, the 30th quarterfinal is starting. Seems like it's going pretty well. And then we'll go talk about something else.
Well, I feel like they're currently running their newcomers section. Like San Remo Giovanni, I think, is like going on now. Good. Like, it's hurting. It's here. Yeah. Let's see. In other national final news, we are getting lineups and songs. We've got news from Latvia, from Albania, from Luxembourg. Latvia with two returning artists potentially in the mix.
Is it Heartbeat? Is that his name?
Yes. Yeah.
Heartbeat, which I make fun of right now, but I like Yust's back catalog. The worst.
And it was written by Aminata.
I swear to God, I've said this twice now on the podcast, and I get that look from Derek every single time.
Just stunned disapproval.
Just flares of eyes and a slow shake of the head.
Also joining the roster for Latvia are our dear friends, Chirizeni. That's right.
For real?
The Eat Your Salad Boys are giving it another go.
Vegans?
So we shall see what happens. Marcus Riva also returning for the umpteenth time. Let's
His 89th time at Supernova.
I mean, once Samantha Tina, got her ticket to Eurovision, I mean, it's only a matter of time before Marcus Riva gets a shot.
He hasn't gone through, has he?
No.
Yeah.
Bless his heart.
Great. We should do a deep dive retrospective on Marcus Riva.
Marcus Riva, the man who has never not submitted a song to Supernova or a thirst trap to Instagram.
Out of curiosity, do we know how many songs officially?
At least 12.
I am looking it up right now.
This is the 69th contest, so...
Nice. So it's at least 70.
Give me a second here.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just wondering if you know off the top of your head.
Oh gosh,
no. I'm curious now because it's gotta be. If it's less than 12, I'll be impressed.
I mean, if it's 10, we should definitely do that and rank them.
All right, Marcus Riva. Let's see if I can find it. So 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, and 23. So he was not in 21, 10. And he was not in 24. He's come in second place twice, fourth, fifth, 11th, and then a whole bunch of non-qualifiers to the final. But he is an established act in Latvia. He's come out with 6 studio albums since his debut in 2009-ish or so. He's a fixture.
Come on, guys.
How much
worse could you do?
Well, we've only heard little segments of these songs for 2025, so we shall see what happens.
I mean, if you can qualify with Blue Mr. Clean, I think you can qualify with this guy.
You love him, Derek.
I am not sure that's the word I would use, or that he would use, more importantly.
All right. In Albania, we know that their national final, Festivali Kungas, is going to be wrapping up on December 22nd, we now know. So by the end of the year, by just before Christmas, we'll have the Albanian song. And we know that the Montenegrin national final, Montesong, is going to be happening. By the time that you hear this podcast, you will know who is singing for Montenegro. We will know the song.
I had completely forgotten. I was like, is Festivali Kungas go back to being our FICMIS present is the first song of the year again? But no,
we are Montenegro. Getting a Thanksgiving present Thanksgiving Eve present, because it's going to be Wednesday. 16 song national final, including one returnee potentially, Nina Zizic, who is the vocalist back in 2013 on Igranka. But
yes,
these songs have all been released. You can listen to them. And again, by the time this episode airs, you will know what we do not. So we shall see what happens.
Good luck, Montenegro.
Yeah.
They have a terrible track record, but
it's really rough.
It's rough. Yeah. But they've sent some good stuff.
They have.
On occasion.
Bless their hearts. They try. I mean, this is the country that sent us Rambo Amadeus and Husi and Slavko.
Oh, and Knez.
And Knez.
I think it's the most successful one I've ever seen.
Okay.
Yeah, Knez did all right.
Yeah, Knez at this point is their highest ranking song ever. They've only made it to the final twice so far, Knez came in 13th place. So
left side.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yep. Even though like a united Serbia and Montenegro did pretty well when they were around, but yeah, little Montenegro just
they're doing it.
They're giving it a shot. Happy to have them.
I'm excited. Yeah. I always have deep concerns for songs that get picked this early. So it just seems like, and I know that a lot of people don't watch or follow any of this stuff, but I really feel like momentum and social media and stuff like that is a thing and is important. Mm. And when you're picking your song in November, I mean, the contest is like 5.5 months away and you're picking this song and you're going to have an artist whose whole life is going to be this 1 3-minute segment of music for that entire time.
But there is also the benefit that
a little too.
There is a little bit of a benefit that they have some time to polish things up and work on, you know, if there's a, you know, a demo version and then the version for the national final, they can spruce things up. They can change languages up a little bit if they want to. They can kind of modify and mold things to sort of optimize them. So there's good, there's bad, but I'm just happy to have something before Thanksgiving. Speaking of other traditions in the Eurovision community before the end of the year, it looks like the voting for the ESC 250, the annual New Year's Eve countdown, has now opened up. That is available if you go over to songfestival.be. It's a Belgian organization that puts that together. You can go out there and vote. So pick your top 10. Hopefully one of them's Euro Neuro. Let's see if we can get them onto the top 250 like we've always wanted. And let's see how the songs from this year do.
Any early predictions on anything from this year? Maybe threatening that top spot or what we think the top spot will be? Is it going to be Tattoo again? Are we going back to Euphoria? Could it be something else entirely?
Going to Cha Cha Cha? Is that, are we?
Could be.
Could we? Tagi Dim? Could it be?
Rim Tim Tagi Dim could. A lot of the, still a lot of love. I don't think it's beaten either of the Loreens, though.
I could see it popping top 5, but I don't see it going really high.
Mm.
Too and many people threatening the top 10. If Joker Out isn't in the top 10 again, I'm preparing.
Well, get your votes in.
Yeah. Be the change, Danny. Be the change.
Come on, Danny.
Yeah, I mean, the code's going to get a ton of love. I bet that's top 5. I'm not sure about anything else from this year. Quite making it that high.
Doomsday Blue, I think there's probably going to be a decent little push for that one too.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be top 100. Easy.
Yeah. I'm going to say that's going to be top 25.
I was going to say top 25 at least.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sticking my neck out for that.
On the topic of Montenegro, I want to point out, I just want to note one other thing that I saw that I don't want to say concerns me exactly, but it was kind of amusing. Montesong's YouTube page posted some clips of the songs, so you can kind of get a feel for what's coming. A user under the name Yassified Pig, great, noted on one of the songs, with a revamp, this could bring a really interesting result for Montenegro. To which the Montenegrin account replied, essentially, what does revamp mean?
Oh dear.
Make of that what you will.
Well, I mean,
you turn them back into a vampire.
Ah.
In that part of the world, you guys should know this.
All right. Do we want to hop into our topic that we've kind of rustled up here?
No, I'm good.
All right. See you next week, everybody.
Call it, nurse.
Right. Yeah. What do we got?
Derek, I'm going to actually throw this to you because you are the one who found this topic, found this podcast. Why don't you kind of introduce it a little bit to us and we can kind of go from there.
Okay. Our topic today comes from The Land Down Under, a little podcast known as All in the Mind from Radio Australia. It's a weekly show where they kind of explore different psychology topics of all sorts. I've been listening to them forever. Wow. I legit don't remember when I started. It was more than 15 years ago. I've been consistent, but I've enjoyed it most of the time. Like short little 30-minute episodes about all sorts of topics. And every now and again, they get into things like music and art. A recent episode kind of explored this idea of, are musical themes transcendent of culture and borders, or is there a universality to it? And they kind of explored this, particularly with lullabies, but also some other ones. There's a music lab that kind of tests your knowledge and plays clips of music from around the world and has you guess what kind of song this is. And I thought this would be sort of an interesting topic to discuss because we look at songs from all these different countries, all these different cultures. Some are not in English. And there is a reliance on how many people are going to get this versus what countries are doing things that are deliberately targeted to a broader swath of the population. So that was kind of my thinking.
So where should we start? Like, what makes a song universal? Like, when you hear something, and if it's in a language that you don't speak, what is it that draws us to sharing the meaning and understanding what the singer's trying to express? Like, what is it about Die Diepte, you know, in Dutch, that we didn't understand, yes, that still resonated with people and brought it to the top 10, although it was completely in Dutch?
When it comes to Eurovision, I think there's a lot of leg up because we all share the same sort of Western musical tradition. I know Eric and I talk a lot about like sort of like motifs and sounds from the Balkans, just sort of introducing a new flavor. But I think that's the extent to which Eurovision doesn't share a sort of completely universal musical vocabulary. I think we're all basically speaking the same, to use a extended and soon to fall apart metaphor, we're all speaking the same Indo-European language of music. We just all have our very disparate branches. So when it comes to like all of our lullabies will sound the same, I like what they said in this podcast, and please do listen to it because it's rather intriguing. Like,
we'll put the link up. We'll put the link up on our socials.
That the lullaby is a great place to start because the lullaby is literally built to accomplish a task. And so it's a human task and every baby responds the exact same way. You have to sing, like, a lullaby has to be calm and soothing, and literally its words don't matter. I love that they talked about the fact that, like, oh, the lullaby that always comes to mind in the English speaking language is Rockabye Baby. And at the end of Rockabye Baby, that baby is dead. That baby is gone. That baby is out of the tree. The bough has broken and that baby is toast. And I think that's a great sort of metaphor for like exploring Eurovision music, because like there's a bunch of songs that we like on first blush, especially if they're not sung in English. Then when you look into the lyrics, you know, it's a song contest, so it has to be palatable for everyone. But there are many times where when you look at the lyrics much closer, it's actually not even close to what you were sort of vibing on. The specifics can get really lost. I have to wonder what non-English speakers think of a song like The Code, because there's such complex thoughts going on there.
But not just complex thoughts, like it's very complex musical stylings. Like, yeah, he's got them all over the place. If I played that for somebody who did not speak English,
let's do a they.
They.
Yeah.
I forgot what I said.
They're all over the place.
They're
all over the place. So, but there's like a rap portion and more an operatic portion and kind of a pop portion. And I do wonder if I play this for somebody who did not speak English at all, and I said, what do you think this song is about? If you just had to guess, I don't think they'd have any idea.
I only think that whoever you're showing that to will come off with just like the vibe of flamboyance, like the vibe of being extremely eclectic. And like, that's getting part way to the message of the song. But I think that part of what made it such a winning song was that complexity that you kind of had to work towards. The lucky us that it was an English song, and that English is as close to a lingua franca for the majority of Europe as we're going to get. But like, again, the complexity is so much that I don't know if this is going to go over. Are we like, is the only way that we can talk about this talking about the genericism of Sweden's submissions? Like, is that what we could get to? Like,
well, let's
across cultures, everything sounds Swedish.
let's look at the last few non-English winners, shall we?
Yeah.
Because I think that there are some really good examples of where we have languages that I don't speak.
Okay. I think we all got the vibe and the vague message of Ziti Ibuoni, though.
Ziti Ibuoni is a good example.
I think we really did. Yeah.
It is abundantly clear what's going on there.
I mean, there's the universal language of horny. I mean, that's just.
But like, rock music is itself a sort of universal language. Like, there's a reason why, like, the communists did not like it. Like, rock, that rock sound, sort of like the 60s, 70s, sort of pure hard rockish sound, that's always been about, like, it's always had youthful rebellion sort of seeped into it. So that's a kind of musical shorthand that worked wonders for them.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, Amar Pellish Deutsch. Abundantly.
That's one.
I feel like
sort of like, again, just sort of like a potency of mood from that. I'll admit that I've never really looked into the lyrics of Amor Pelos Dois, but like,
well, as somebody who hasn't, when you hear that song, what do you imagine that it's about?
Yeah,
it's a specific kind of like tender but powerful love, and that's it, right? Like the it, is it?
It's,
what's with this? What's with
it
this?
It is, but it's also it's very Portuguese. It's
actually a shopping list.
I have to get my bacalao. I've got to get my...
It actually translates as eggs enough for the two of us.
There you go. it's specifically Salvador pleading for a lost love to return.
Sure.
And, if you were to remember me, say that I live to love, and just very, very pleading, very, very quietly, don't forget me. Don't leave me behind. I have enough love for the two of us. If you need to grow into that love, it's very, very sad and wistful.
Sounds like If You Forget Me, the poem.
Yeah.
One of the things I noticed in the podcast was, and if you took the quiz, I think Eric mentioned this before the show, that identifying love songs is very difficult.
Yes.
And I find that interesting because when we think about all the love songs that we've kind of heard in Eurovision, they don't sound anything alike. They're all over the place.
I feel like that's partially because there's no such thing as a specific love song. There's the love song of you and I are in love and we are happy. There's the love song of you and I are in love and we are in a tempestuous argument. There's you and I are in love, but we are being separated. There's I'm just meeting you and I really want to boink you.
Call me maybe.
So call me maybe. when you say a love song, and love is certainly something that is universal throughout human experience, and affection, but that expresses itself in so many different ways. Like there's the how many different ways do you say love in Greek? You have agape and eros and all of that. Mm-hmm. How do you a lullaby is a song with a specific purpose, a song to lull one to sleep. This quiz that we mentioned also has which of these songs are healing songs and meant to be, that is a specific purpose. A love song, that could be anything.
There's so many different shades of love song. And name the last, think of the classic ideal of the love song. The love song that is a pure, happy, I love you song, positive feelings. When was the last time one of those came in top three?
A song that this wasn't top three, but a song that came to mind when I was thinking about love songs being immediately recognizable as love songs was, I feel like we bring this up a lot, but When We're Old.
You do. Yeah.
If you play that for someone who doesn't speak English, they're going to know what's going on.
Oh, yeah. And it's that's
as pure a love song as you can get, really.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess if you didn't know, now that I've said that, you could be mourning something sad, perhaps, just because it's a bit maudlin. But I don't know. It screams love song pretty clearly.
Perhaps that why I'm going to bring it up again, Derek. I can't wait for you to grit your teeth. Is that why Fairo More was so hyped? Because that is sort of a bittersweet love song, but really leaning hard into that conventional sound of a love song. Is that what made it so immensely universal?
Well, we never really got to see that.
It's true. Yeah.
I want to say yes. And there's a part of me that thinks that was the 2020 winner we just didn't see.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a song. I never really listened to the lyrics of that one. I personally didn't care for it, but I can see the appeal. Mm-hmm. If When We're Old is sort of an understated kind of soft love song, that one is like a screaming explosion love song.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a sadness.
Love,
yeah. But there's a real sadness to that one. Mm-hmm. Like Fairo More is like frustration and like a hollowness, and When We're Old is contented.
Yes, that's very very, very sure of yourself in When We're Old.
Yeah, I think of the more popular stories. Like that's a song. Like I listened to that many times. I never looked up the lyrics for it, but I've gotten to I know what it means. But like initially when it came out, I just listened to it over and over again, and it's like I know exactly what he's singing about, even if I don't know what he's saying.
Yeah, I mean
the emotion is very clear.
Yeah,
it seems like. I'm not going to say this on your behalf necessarily, but you say you didn't look up the lyrics. It kind of sounds like you didn't have to.
No, I never felt that I did. I feel like there's other songs where I remember when we have these conversations and we're reviewing songs and discussing them and breaking them down and kind of getting our impressions of them. My opinion, at least for me, goes up or down based on if I look into the lyrics, am I going to appreciate this more or less?
Mm.
Like if I look this up and there's, especially with France and Italy, Hello, Kat. With France and Italy especially, they lyrically, they're doing so much. Like, they really tap into something, whereas I feel like other countries kind of go on like easy routes. When we're old, I mean, maudlin is a good word for it. It's lyrically,
it's gloopy.
Yeah. It's so gloopy. It's so Hallmark channel kind of stuff. But I think what makes it work is the actual performance and what's the behind husband. It.
A prop, yes. As it were.
A prop.
Yeah. And you bring up something that, you know, we as Eurovision viewers and as consumers of media in this way, like when we're taking these quizzes, we don't get the benefit of actually seeing the performance.
That's yes. True. Yeah.
It's audio only.
It's audio
only. In the case of this thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Which there's again,
a certain way that a love song looks.
Right. I mean, I think about a song like When We're Old, and I think that could easily be like, if that were performed completely in Lithuanian and then somebody said, is this a love song or is this a lullaby?
Mm.
It could have very well been that cozy, comforting vibe. Mm-hmm. But at Eurovision, there's the vision part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, it's not Euro yeah. Listen.
That's a different show. Yeah.
By the way, on at least on Apple Music, I'm guessing on Spotify as well, the single version of When We're Old does have a version of it in Lithuania.
Hmm.
And okay. it's very pretty.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean
it's a beautiful song.
It's
I don't think any language exists that would make that song not pretty.
What is it about
I'll say
a
German,
song?
Das Quizens, I thought you.
And that's our offensive accent of the week, y'all.
Yeah, Eric covered it. Wasn't it about, yeah. What is it about a song like Rim Tim Tuggy Dim, though, that ends up being universal? Because that is not so much a rather simple message to get across. But I'm not sure if that message is actually adequately communicated by that kind of song. Well, I have to wonder if a bunch of people know what that song's actually about.
I think that's part of the novelty of Rim Tim Tuggy Dim, though. It's when you look at the song, you think this is just a party dance song with somebody who's really charismatic. And then when you look beyond it, they were like, oh, this special present has just been presented to me that I get to open and wrap up and unwrap and say, oh, there's something else going on here. It's like, yes, you're consuming the fun, light, fluffy cotton candy, but then you realize, you know, there's something else going on here. And that might be that novelty of it may have added something else to a song like Rim Tim Tuggy Dim.
Well, the quiz we've mentioned a couple of times where you listen to a clip of a song and you have to identify which of these purposes it has. We've talked about, okay, is it a lullaby? Is it a love song? Is it a healing song? We haven't talked as much about the other option, which is it's for dancing.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of Eurovision is for dancing. And I think
it's for dancing.
I think Rim Tim is a good example of that. Like in the sense, and I'm not like, I like the message of Rim Tim Tuggy Dim. I also understand that it's very fun without any mess. Let's look at like,
yeah, is that the like, wonderful thing about it? Like, isn't that the wonderful thing about music is that we don't have to care what it's about?
I think in some cases, yeah. I mean, look at Slow-Mo or,
mm-hmm.
or
yeah,
Slow-Mo, I mean, like,
like, you mean Hypnotic,
people,
yeah.
How many people know that Slow-Mo is about looking at my ass?
Yeah.
Specifically Danny's ass.
But I mean when somebody asked like how do you know what the song is for, I thought, well, when the butts come out, that's when you know. and so yeah, with Rim Tim, I think it's and with a lot of songs that have done well.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that like on a surface level, a song like Rim Tim Tuggy Dim can be just a simple dance party song that is very inviting, but there's just this other little layer going on that it's,
yeah, I think, you know, there's a limit as to
deep into.
There's a limit as to how much can be communicated. And I think sort of a universal feeling there's a universal language that all of us in this neck of the world have when it comes to the sort of mood or the sort of vibe that a song is trying to communicate. I don't, you know, if you listen to a, you know, if you're listening to Rim Tim Tuggy Dim, I think you're at least in the right ballpark when you have something like that. But how, like, is it part of the pleasure of Eurovision is or of hearing any song that's not in your native language, of discovering what it's really about? Like, a song that does really good at Eurovision tends to have a certain level of complexity to it these days.
Eurovision certainly like, attracts language
completely
nerds.
Completely ignore tattoo. So, but
I think for some people that really is a big part of it. Sam, I'm looking at you on this, that like getting to kind of learn the meanings of these things and getting into national cultures and things like that is a big part of it. Eurovision is a celebration of that sort of thing.
I mean, look at the success of songs like Shum. Like how many
there's Shum.
Finally. I mean, finally. Which I guess, you know, could be potentially, you know, it doesn't really fit into any of those four categories that we were talking about.
God, but it worked so well because that's a song about awakening the earth. And there's something that is almost ritualistic about raving.
Absolutely.
Like, there is something very primal about a rave.
It's a dance song. It's also that healing song, but it's like not healing the body. It's healing the earth and waking the earth up from slumber.
Yeah. And it's a love song because I love it. I thought that works.
And it's a lullaby if your baby's insane.
With a song like The Code, I was so blown away by it this last year when it won, because I was like, there is something so intellectual going on with this song, and it is definitely not immediately palatable to everyone. I was like, how did it win when there's so many more simple and seemingly universal songs to reward, to prefer? It seems so out of left field for that to be the one to win. What do you got,
juries.
Sam? What is it?
Juries.
Well, yeah, I know juries get it in advance, but it's like,
that's a good point.
As much as we like to bemoan the juries, it got plenty of love from the televote.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'm not denying that, but it's, you know, it's something to keep in mind.
I mean, I'll note, and this was something that was I found really surprising. I was looking back on stuff from this year and like the stuff we posted on socials and things like that. And in the second semifinal, which had a lot of heavy hitters, after each of the like jury shows, we went outside and we polled. We're part of the group doing the public polling. We literally polled thousands of people. It was a very fun thing, and I think it went very, very well. And the most shocking thing about it was, I think that second semifinal, which had Europapa, it closed with it, which seemed like an absolute slam dunk number one pick from the folks in the arena. It wasn't. It was The Code.
Hmm. Yeah.
It won that poll. It wasn't like a blowout. Europapa did extremely well. I was kind of with you, Danny, and it just seemed like this is so good. This is so well done. It has too many layers to have that immediate impact. And
there are so many shades of subtlety and complexity and wordplay. It's like, how can any of this actually get taken apart? But are there those two levels? Is this a crazy, insane dance song? And then, also,
like, then it won the poll, and it was like, okay, well, we already know it's going to be Jury Darling. It might just have everything. And basically did. It just crushed it. This isn't going to contribute a ton to this discussion exactly, but the only other recent songs in non-English to have won the contest both came from Ukraine, and Stefania, which won. I feel like as time goes on, and before I say this, I'm going to note, Stefania is great. I love it. Mm-hmm. It was a perfectly worthy winner. That being said, the more results we get and the more contests we have, that is going to stick out in a lot of ways. It's going to feel like an exception to a lot of what we understand about how the contest works and things like that, just because of what was going on.
We knew at the time. I don't think that's something we realized later. I think even like the day of the contest, we were sort of like, this is going to be big and we just have to be ready for it.
It's probably going to win.
Eurovision winning song isn't just indicative of, you know, the global musical zeitgeist at that moment. It's a snapshot of what is going on in human existence, and a significant newsworthy conflict is certainly part of that existence. So
and we talked about it before, the song was just somehow the perfect song for the moment.
Yeah,
it's just it that really the moment arrived later.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but like, even once they were at the contest and they were like, the staging, the performance, the message, the story, all of it, it somehow worked on multiple levels.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't win the national final, as you'll recall.
Yeah, technically, no.
It was the second. Oh. There was a whole thing. You know what it is. yeah. But that's one where it doesn't quite fit into this discussion the way some of the others do. It is not in English. It is, I mean, I guess it to an extent, it in the context of the world at the time and of Ukraine at the time, I think people felt like they could connect to it without knowing any of the words.
All you needed was the tiniest bit of context and you just sort of understood it. In a not particularly,
I mean,
in a not particularly subtle or complex way, but on a basic level, you sort of understood what was going on. And isn't that what Eurovision's all about, baby? I thought it was about political infighting and seeing whether or not we could punish England again, but apparently it's about the universality of
music.
As
it turns out, if you're Sam Ryder, yes, you can. Second place. Any other year.
Probably.
This is a really very cool topic. Derek, thank you so much for bringing this up.
Anything else on this we want to make sure we get to here?
We plumbed a lot of it. This is a topic that I especially would love to know what the listeners have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And they can find us on social media, 12pointsUSA on all the standard outlets, 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com if you want to email us directly. If you want to just scope out a little bit more about these quizzes that we're talking about, the Music Lab, the Natural History of Song Project, if you go to themusiclab.org/NHS, that's the Natural History of Song. It's a really, really fascinating project that is based at the Harvard University Music Lab, but there's collaborators. I mean, just looking at the team members listed here, you know, you have collaborators from all over the country, all over the world. There's, you know, ethnographers and discographers, and it's a really
cartographers.
It's a great group of folks. Really fascinating project, and just kind of fun just to kind of delve into. So highly, highly, highly recommend that you give that a try. Themusiclab.org. And if you wanted to listen to the full podcast that we are referencing again, it's All in the Mind, which is a presentation of ABC Australia. This original broadcast is also originally put together by the folks over at Radio New Zealand Aotearoa on the Our Musical Minds podcast. Highly, highly, highly recommend they scope this out. We will put this on our social media, of course. We will meet up on our next episode. We have Thanksgiving coming up. We've got Monty Song coming up. Derek, you've got your honeymoon coming up. It's going to be a busy couple of weeks for us, but we will catch you on our next episode. Until then, everybody, I've been Samantha.
Yeah, I've been Derek.
I'm Kai Rizdahl.
And I've been Danny.
And America.
Stop listening.
Stop listening now.
Planet Money. Oh, we did through that whole thing without doing an R-nar.
R-nar!
Australia.
Well, that's our stinger.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.